It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The name LeVar Burton conjures different images depending on which of the award-winning actor's iconic roles means the most to you. To some, it's his portrayal of the young African tribesman Kunta Kinte, who was captured and sold into slavery in America, that will always stand out. To others, Mr. Burton will forever be Geordi LaForge, the blind starship navigator in the TV series Star Trek, The Next Generation. For me, it's his portrayal of Detroit Tigers outfielder Ron LaFleur that is most memorable. And to many young Americans, LeVar Burton is the man who inspired them to read books as the host of the Emmy Award-winning PBS program Reading Rainbow. This weekend, Mr. Burton will be in town for Steel City Con. He joins us on Essential Pittsburgh to talk about the next generation of Reading Rainbow for the digital age, unprecedented success on Kickstarter, and maybe a question or two about the future of spaceflight. LeVar Burton, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
We've got a Detroit Tigers fan, a Ron LaFleur fan, or just Major League Baseball?
Just a fan of how well you played that part. The scene where you're standing in the outfield and insults are being hurled at you and the tears are coming down your face. I will never forget that scene.
Thank you so much. It's very rare to get a Ron LaFleur mention. It's thrilling.
Well, good. I'm glad I was able to do that. I want to start you off with a Twitter question, and we are taking tweets at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive, also our email address, ESSPGH@WESA.FM, and you can join the conversation by phone at 412-246-2002. Nettie P. tweets, is there an author you wish you could meet?
Wow. As I just finished Donna Tartt's The Goldfinch, I'd love to have a conversation with her. And now I'm reading Game of Thrones. So, you know, those are authors that are very much top of mind.
You're coming to Pittsburgh for Steel City Con, so it's a safe bet that a lot of fans will want to talk to you about Star Trek. And there's a classic Saturday Night Live skit where William Shatner, who played Captain Kirk, tells his adoring fans to get a life. And it seems to reflect some real-life frustration he might have had with always being identified with that role. Does being asked about playing Geordi LaForge ever get old for you?
It doesn't bother me in the least. First, let me say that I'm a huge fan of Gene Roddenberry's vision. I grew up reading science fiction and enjoying science fiction in the popular culture, and Star Trek was one of the few examples of science fiction in the popular culture or a representation of the future where people who looked like me were embraced. So I've always been a fan of Gene's vision, and to have grown up and become a part of that storytelling mythos and to represent for people with physical challenges what Nichelle Nichols represented for me is it's difficult to explain how important that is to me, what it means to me in my life.
Did you have a favorite character on that show?
On the original show?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really always intrigued with Spock. I always identified with him as the outsider. He was different from everybody else. And, of course, I grew up as, you know, a black kid in the 60s and very much felt the outsider in America.
Let's hear a clip from Star Trek The Next Generation with LeVar Burton as Geordi LaForge, a character who is blind.
Geordi? Lieutenant, you're on the observation lounge. Send a team here now. Medical's been worried about you.
Help me. Help me to not give in to the wild things coming into my mind.
Geordi, my job is security.
Tasha, please.
All right, helping is more important. Geordi, how can I help you?
Help me to see like you do.
But you already see better than I can.
I see more. But more isn't better.
Geordi, please put these...
I want to see in shallow, dim, beautiful, human ways.
We'll talk about it, Geordi. Right now, I'm going to take you to sick bay. All right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's LeVar Burton as Geordi LaForge on Star Trek The Next Generation. And LeVar, we have Jim in Oakland who wants to join the conversation. Jim, you are on with LeVar Burton. Hi, Jim.
Yeah. Hi, Paul. I love the show, and I'm blind myself, and I want to know how this is really interesting. What kind of like practice rehearsal did it take for you to portray a blind person being sighted? What did you have to do to get ready for this act, for this characterization? And I'll hang up and I'll listen to the explanation on the radio.
Okay, Jim. Well, thank you for calling in with that question.
Well, it's a great question, Jim. Actually, right after I found out that I had won the role, I took myself to Oklahoma and engaged in a couple of days of doing ropes coursework, challenge course. And there was one particular element on this challenge course called the Pamper Pole, which is basically a telephone pole 30 feet in the air. And you get strapped into a harness and you climb the pole, and then you find a way to maneuver yourself up onto a platform, a 12 by 12 square on top of the telephone pole. And out across from you, about 8 to 10 feet away, is a trapeze bar. And the challenge is to then leap, as the metaphor, into the void and grab the trapeze, and then you get lowered to the ground. Well, I did it successfully in the morning, and then after lunch I was challenged to do it blindfolded. And that was, I think, one of the activities that I engaged in that really helped cement what sort of a journey I was on doing that pamper pole without being able to see where I was and really just using my other senses. During the course of the time we shot Next Generation, of course, as an actor, I was the facility of my eyes were taken away from me by putting on the visor, and so I really did have to develop other means of not just communicating but navigating around the sets as well.
Could you see through the visor?
Very little. Very little. About 85% of my vision was taken away when I put the visor on, which is interesting because I played a guy who, as you heard in the clip, saw more than everybody else. But that clip was really interesting to me because, again, it points up the aspect of being the other. Geordi, like Spock, was different from everybody else. And I think in a lot of my roles throughout my career, it's been that other fitting in. In Star Trek is a great example, that egalitarian society, that meritocracy, where if you are capable and are the best person for the job, it doesn't matter what other factors are involved, race, color, creed, sex, handicap. If you are the best person for the job, you are the one that is in that position.
Well, speaking of being the best person for the job, you were chosen to play the role of Kunta Kinte on the groundbreaking television miniseries Roots while still an acting student at USC.
Right.
How did you end up getting cast in the show before you even graduated from college?
It was just really a matter of being in the right place at the right time. I was there studying. They had really sort of exhausted all the normal means of finding professional talent. They'd seen everybody in Los Angeles who had an agent who physically fit the description of the character. They'd gone to Chicago, New York. They'd come back to Los Angeles, still hadn't found what they were looking for. And so they cast a wider net. They called the drama schools around town, and there I was at the University of Southern California.
What were you told about what made you write for the part?
Interestingly enough, the very first time I met the director, David Green, it was in an office, and it was just the two of us. And, of course, I was a theater major. My training was all about the stage. And so the first time I read through the scene, I was projecting to the back row. And David told me later that he was ready to throw me out of the office because it was completely inappropriate. But he took the time to explain to me the difference between acting for the stage and acting for the camera. And he said that it was in that adjustment that I made that gave him the confidence that finally he had somebody who had the right energy, the right look, and the right chops.
Roots had a profound impact on the dialogue in America about slavery and issues of race. Did you have the sense when you were making that show that you were involved in something that was, again, I use the term groundbreaking.
I don't think any of us, and of course you remember, if you've seen Roots, that it was a who's who of African Americans in both the theater and in movies and television. And so the sense on the set was that this was really important and unprecedented, at least in the storied careers of all of those, from Lou Gossett to Cicely Tyson, Dr. Maya Angelou. I mean, everyone was very excited about the nature of the material. This was the first time that the story of slavery in America was being told from the point of view of the Africans, of the black people. And this was really, really different, a different take on the slave narrative in America. And so there was definitely a sense of excitement, but no one had any sort of idea that it would become the cultural phenomenon, the sociological phenomenon that Roots, the book, and the miniseries then did become.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is LeVar Burton, and you can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm. On Twitter at esspgh, hashtag EPLive. Again, 412-246-2002. In the Star Trek clip we played, you mentioned wanting to see in different ways, and that could be said about your work on Reading Rainbow, which allowed children to see the world in a different way through books. How did you get involved with that show?
I had done a couple of seasons of a previous children's television series on PBS called Rebop that was produced out of WGBH in Boston. So I was on the short list, I suppose, of hosts for Reading Rainbow. My mom was an English teacher, and so I grew up in a house where reading was actually mandatory. You know, there was no option. You either read a book in my mom's house or you got hit in the head with one. It was just that simple. So the idea of using this very powerful medium, and certainly Roots was an experience that really opened my eyes to the sheer power of the medium of television and communication. In 8 consecutive nights of television, I experienced this nation become transformed around its ideas about what the cost of slavery was, the human cost. And so the idea of using this very powerful medium to steer children back in the direction of literature and the written word. Reading Rainbow was originally conceived as a program to address what teachers call the summer slide, when a child is in the process of cracking the code as a reader and they take that summer vacation. They come back in September and their reading and comprehension skills have plummeted. And so the idea was to meet children where they were in the 80s, and it was television. That's where our kids were hanging out, especially during the summer months. And so meeting them where they were and taking them where we wanted them to go was the mission.
Your last TV airing of Reading Rainbow was in 2009, and after more than 20 seasons and numerous Emmys for the show and for you as host and producer, Reading Rainbow went off the air. Why did that happen?
It was a result of No Child Left Behind, the governmental policy that mandated that we spend all available dollars teaching children how to read, and so there was no room in the budget to instill and foster a love of reading in our emerging literate population. And so Reading Rainbow was deemed obsolete.
We have a question from Ron Ye on Facebook. What does he, meaning you, LeVar, think about these digital times and how ebooks would have changed Reading Rainbow back then?
Well, I don't have to imagine how it would have changed Reading Rainbow back then, because we have reinvented Reading Rainbow for these new digital times.
Right.
I believe that if you want to reach kids today, you need to be in the digital realm. And people ask me all the time. I mean, there is, yeah, I suppose, a difference between consuming literature in a bound book and on a digital device. However, my preference is simply that children read, and I really don't care the delivery system of choice. And I believe we have a tremendous opportunity to use this very engaging medium of tablet computing to encourage kids to read. We have kids coming to the Reading Rainbow app and reading 200,000 books a week. Now, that's significant to me, because what it says is that kids will come to these devices to read, not simply play games, but to read, and that's huge. It's a game changer, in my view.
Talk about the Kickstarter campaign and the project that you were raising money for.
Well, the Kickstarter campaign was designed to raise money to help us further the mission of the Reading Rainbow brand. Again, when Reading Rainbow went off the air, my business partner, Mark Wolf, and I secured the rights to the brand and decided that it was worthwhile to attempt to reboot the brand, to make it relevant to today's digital learners. And so 2 years ago, we released the Reading Rainbow app. And the Kickstarter was an effort to raise some money to expand our reach. We are only available on two platforms, the Apple iPad and the Kindle Fire. And if you want to be effective, you have to be available on more than just, you know, an expensive tablet device. So we were looking for $1 million to be able to put the Reading Rainbow app on the web and then finance the development of a product, a Reading Rainbow product, based on the app that was specifically for teachers to use in classrooms. I believe that if you do not have the financial wherewithal to access these new modern digital technologies, your child is more likely to encounter them in school. And so a school version of the product was really important to us.
And the campaign, I mean, the success was unprecedented. The goal was 1 million. I think the outcome was much more than that, over 5 million. That had to be tremendously gratifying.
It was crazy because it was very unexpected, very unanticipated. And what it really showed to me was a couple of things. One, there was a whole generation of adults now who watched Reading Rainbow growing up and really felt that it was worthy enough to want to make sure that Reading Rainbow was there for succeeding generations, children of their own and children that they would never meet in their lives. And it really did point up to me that America still cares about literacy for children. And it was very encouraging and as well as very surprising.
Actor LeVar Burton is our guest here on Essential Pittsburgh, 412-246-2002 to join the conversation. Let's go to Lauren in Upper St. Clair. Lauren, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You are on with LeVar Burton.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. LeVar, I had the great good fortune of meeting you briefly, along with Dr. May C. Jemison, I know, who is a dear friend of yours. And in the vein of the conversation about education, wanted to know if you could comment on your thoughts on the U.S. space program in context of the work that Dr. Jemison is doing around education and science education in particular.
Well, May Carol Jemison, for your listeners that aren't familiar, May Jemison is the first African-American woman in space and flew on the space shuttle, is a scientist, a doctor, and a futurist. May heads up an effort called the 100-Year Starship, which, as briefly as I can put it, is an effort to gather all of those who have interest in and expertise in designing not just propulsion systems, but social systems and the psychology, all of the things that we would need in order to put humanity in another star system within the next 100 years. The point being, by imagining this and embarking on this audacious journey, we actually do solve problems on Earth in the here and now. And I believe that is the function that our space exploration and our space program has always served. In the service of going out there and exploring, we are always solving problems that have huge and tremendous application right here on Earth in the present. And it is part of that that cycle that continues to propel humanity forward. Our reach should exceed our grasp, or what else is heaven for, is the favorite saying of my business partner Mark. And our interaction with space exploration, or exploration of all kinds, from you know, the earliest endeavors of mankind, have always been a part of that cycle of propelling humanity forward, our continuing evolution as a species.
Lauren, thank you very much for that phone call. How viable does commercial spaceflight seem to be at this point in history?
More viable than ever. And genuinely, as a commercial enterprise, it seems to me that now that the enterprise has been taken over, or at least engaged in on a major level by entities other than the government, and getting the entrepreneurial community involved, I think, really will have tremendous and significant boons for space flight and interstellar travel in the future.
I wanted to go back to a question about Reading Rainbow, which kind of works in a shameless plug for the station. But we've addressed the summer slide and the importance of reading as part of our Life of Learning initiative on this program and with our news department. Do you see, LeVar, a spike in the use of the Reading Rainbow app during certain times of the year?
We've only been in the market for 2 years. We launched during the summertime. We launched in June of 2012. So there's not a whole lot of data. Our growth has been steady, and it doesn't. What it reveals is that children who use the app aren't reading on a seasonal basis. They're reading continually, and they're reading more. I mean, you know, we just reached the milestone of 200,000 books a week, and we began, obviously, you know, 2 years ago at zero. So the steady increase that we have seen in the use of the app isn't related to the season of the year. It's related to the desire of the child to continue to engage in the activity of reading through this digital technology.
One last question for you. We talked earlier about some of the great roles you've had the opportunity to play in your acting career. What would be the next great role for you? Is there something out there left that you have a burning desire, a role that you have a burning desire to play? Or is there a thought that one more will at least come to you before you're done as an actor?
Oh, as an actor? Oh, I don't know. I feel like I have done less of going after roles, and I think my career is a string of really executing well on those opportunities that have come my way. If there's anything that I really want to pursue in life, it is the idea of spreading literacy. I genuinely believe that it is impossible for a human being to develop to their full potential without literacy, without loving to read. And so this is my life's work. The acting that I do is what gives me an opportunity to pursue my passion, which is to spread literacy to children specifically, because it's an important part of human development.
LeVar Burton has been our guest. He'll be in Pittsburgh this weekend for Steel City Con. LeVar Burton, thanks so much for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Well, Pittsburgh is the home of Fred Rogers and the Fred Rogers Center, and so it has a special place in my heart, always.
Take care. Safe travels.
God bless.
Coming up, more about Steel City Con with Joe Woese of the Toonzeum, who says Pittsburgh is Geek City USA. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.